Good afternoon. This is Jonathan Nexum. You're listening to the Jonathan Nexum Show. Today we've got a lot to discuss. We're going to discuss matters of finance, money, Christianity, all sorts of different things, current events, but maybe even a little bit of sports, maybe a little bit of finance, a little bit of business. But let's get down to it. What are some things that we face today? Later on, we'll get to my soapbox for the day, which is going to be interesting because it's going to be dealing with speech, dealing with speech. But nonetheless, let's start off with the first thing on my agenda, current events, which, if you want to think politically, is the Russian and Trump so-called collusion, if you will. Right now, they're trying to decide whether was the Russia involved in the election and yada, yada, yada. Here's my take. The evidence is overwhelmingly, because if you look at the interviews they've had, gotten nowhere. Mueller has gotten nowhere. He's doing a terrible, terrible job as FBI director or whatever he does for investigating the case. This case needs to end. And the conclusion is that this was the Clinton campaign and the Democrat who was going on. And there's no Russian collusion. I mean, if there was, then why in the world does Donald Trump want to arm Ukraine against Russia? I mean, the overwhelming evidence for it is so overwhelming, there's no Russian collusion. Here's my conclusion, one outrightly. And here's the reason why this is still going on. It's because the Democrats are still so embarrassed and so mad at how embarrassingly they lost the election that they can't get to grip the fact that they lost. They don't want to let go of it. They're hanging on to this, but the fact that they wanted their campaign person, which is far worse than the president. Matter of fact, I think we have a good president. Donald Trump is doing everything so far that he said he was going to do. I mean, he cut taxes, which is good. Regardless of it, if Clinton would have won the election, we would probably be in a far worse, if not in complete war right now, especially with North Korea, especially with the Middle East. Now, also, you've got something that hasn't been done in a while, is Trump moved the embassy and recognized Jerusalem as a capital of Israel. Now, I'm a scholar, I'm a biblical student. I'm a student of the Bible. We're all students of the Bible, those that study the Bible. As far as the Jews are concerned, as far as it is, that Jerusalem is not the place of worship anymore. It was back in the New Testament where it chose. That's where they get gathered together. I'm not saying that people in Israel matter. I'm not saying that people in Israel don't matter. They do matter. Everybody is able to the gospel. But Christians, church, is God's designed place for us now. But he did accomplish and did recognize Jerusalem as his fantasy. And I think that was a good thing. I think that was a smart move. But nonetheless, is that this whole point is being that Democrats are just sore losers. They're just sore losers. And the FBI wants to try to cover up what they failed to do with Hillary Clinton and her 33,000 emails that she illegally, and there's more evidence for that than Trump's Russian collusion. What should have happened is Hillary Clinton should have been disqualified for the race, and it should have been Trump versus Sanders at the end of it. But nonetheless, what is done is done, and this needs to be let go and needs to be moved forward. Don't indict Trump for something he didn't do. So, there's my political rant for today. Okay, what's next on the agenda? Issues in society. Go to education. Our kids go to school today. Take education what it was about 30 years ago, at most, 30 years. You look at it, you think on it, education system gotten better or worse? From what I've seen and what I've actually been through, I say, from what I've heard from my parents, my grandparents, and from others, the education system today is not as good as it was back then. Am I saying that kids aren't learning anything? No, they're probably learning stuff. They're not learning as well as they're capable of. Because now, I hate to say it, but it's almost like if high schools, especially, then the teachers want to see how much percentage of their students more than what they learn, what they're teaching. It's that their thinking is that whether they pass or fail, I'm going to get paid on Friday anyway. That should not be our goal. If we're teaching in the education system, our goal should not be whether we get paid a Friday or what rate of just passing the class. Our goal should be what our students are learning and taking and having a desire for teaching and to be able to teach them well, and that way they can know things that's going on in the world. That way when they get out of the high school and out of the school system, whether they go to college or not, they will have a mindset of, okay, I know how to behave in society. I know the way this thing works. I'm prepared to get a job or whatever it is that I may be. And if they do decide to go to college, that they should take on a greater understanding of learning, and that when they get out of college, they need to understand that there's responsibility that everybody's going to go. I mean, today it's just watered down, milky, soggy, you know, just do your work and it'll be all right. We'll all get along. Here's a study guide to the test. This will be the exact test. If you just look it over and memorize what the answers are, you could pass. So make them study. Make them work for it. Earn it. Don't go on there and just give them the grade. I mean, it's just stupid. That's what it is. It's just stupid to me. I think our education system needs to be fixed. Especially in English grammar. I'm bad at this. I need to get better at English grammar. I'm glad I'm being taught. Now, my school is better. And the English grammar has gone from knowing the adjectives, knowing the verbs, parts of speech, diagramming senses, this, to, you know what, we'll just watch movies, or we'll just do this, or let's say about foreign literature. Now we need to have a class on grammar and how to use it, how to speak. So that we're educated. We don't need so-called fishermen and don't know how to use words and don't know how to talk, sound like I'm edumacated, if you want to say. And I'm not saying just because you can use the grammar that you're educated. Anybody can learn grammar. But what I want to see our education system better desire for teaching the students what needs to be taught and what they need to know. Math, science, history, social studies, whatever category it may be. Vocabulary, words, I mean, define words. You tell them, like we used to have back in elementary school, like this was good for me that I went through, is that they had us define five words from the dictionary. We'd pick out five words and we define them. That's why I want to be safe in the parts of speech. And we had to define the words, and it helped a little bit. Helped some. Got us back to do it. It got us knowing words. Then I got to high school. Like, we're going to learn about American lit. We're going to learn about British lit and all this other stuff. And we're going to learn about foreign language. And it's almost like words to English grammar. This is America. Standing is that if you're going to take that, let that be in junior and senior year. And let the original English be in freshman, sophomore, at least. If not, move British and that other foreign literature to college or something else that you can learn later. Get down to what's necessary. Teach them how to properly say things. How to enunciate the words. How to use. I don't know everything there needs to know about education. I don't know everything there is need to know. I need to know about English. I need to grow in everything. But from what I've seen through society, and what I'm currently going through in my studies is that the education system could be better. It could be better. I'm kind of disappointed in our education system now, public education. But regardless, another problem. Current issues in society, racism. There's been a lot of that. People want to say, well, I don't like color skin and don't judge me. And they don't like people because they're from a different country or they're from a different nationality or because the color of their skin. Look, I study scripture. And if I'm not wrong, and Acts 17 gives us the answer. And some questions to pose and to think about. Here you go. 17 says, the God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in temples made by man, nor does he serve by human hands as though he needed anything. Since he himself gives to all mankind life and breath and everything. And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined the allotted period and the boundaries of their dwelling place, that they should seek God and perhaps feel their way toward him and find him, yet he is actually not far from each one of them. For in him we live and move and have our being. Even some of your own poets have said, we are indeed his offspring. His offspring. But being then God's offspring, we ought not to think that the divine being is like gold or silver or stone, image formed by the art of imagination of man. We can go on and on and on and so forth about this passage, but from one man, God made every nation of man. We all descended from Adam. We don't inherit sin, so to speak, but we all descended from Adam. Adam was the first man. God made woman from man, Adam, took a rib from his side, made woman. He helped meet for Adam. And so it began, and then he had the flood, all sorts of different things. He studied the script. But, here's the point. Why do we feel so much of hatred that we want to just want to get rid of people? We're just so prejudiced nowadays. When one of the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians is love. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, all sorts of, and so forth. Why would you think love is the first fruit of the Spirit? Why is love the first fruit of the Spirit? Well, the definition of the Bible is love. I can see God's love demonstrated. God's love shown throughout. God's loved the world. He gave his only begotten Son. He loves us. He wants us to be with him in heaven. But we can't do that if we're prejudiced and if we hate our brother. Matthew 22:34-40 gives us two biggest commands that hangs all the law of the prophets. One is you should love your Lord, love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and all thy soul and all thy mind. And the second like unto it, you shall love thy neighbor as thyself. Both of those hang the law and the prophets. You look throughout that and you want to know what? Love God and love your neighbor. That's what it was all about. Love God and love your neighbor. How do you love God now? And how do you love your neighbor now? How you love God now is by obeying his word, obeying his commands. You're loving God. You love your neighbor by helping them get together. Love God and love your neighbor. Both of those things hang by all the prophets. God's love demonstrated. God's love sent by he gave us his only begotten Son, died on the cross. Fact. Think about different areas. You think about this thing. So if we go throughout life and we just hate, how are we better than the terrorists besides killing? Terrorists are growing, or the Muslims are growing up and taught that if you're not agreeing with them, that you shouldn't be with them, or that you should hate them, or that you should. I mean, they're taught from day one that Americans are infidels. I know that. Read the Quran, or I've read parts of the Quran, so to speak, which is not the inspired word of God, by the way. Man written. It's a bunch of garbage, if you will. They're taught this stuff. It's all about the home. You want to raise up a generation that's nice and that we all work and good? The homes need to be repaired. God needs to be put first in the home. The husband needs to love his wife. The wife needs to be submitted to the husband. That all needs to be working to help each other and not to draw trouble. Godly homes. Families that love the Lord are obedient to his word and they have to train up the child in the way that he should go to the Lord. Understand? That's why the Proverbs are key. Proverbs are key. Book of Wisdom. The fear, Chakma. Book of Wisdom. The Proverbs of Solomon. King Solomon, the wisest king on earth. If you read the book of Proverbs, you will see that the book of Proverbs deals with all aspects of life. So, I love the book of Proverbs. I love it. I try to read at least a chapter a day out of Proverbs. And it says, my son, my son, my son. Several places in there. And we train up a child in the way he should go. Proverbs 22:6. In there, and also says, I can't remember exactly where we're at in Proverbs, but it says, do not despise thy son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord. I mean, discipline. Don't despise the discipline of the Lord. Correct it. We need to be willing to change and to make our lives better for God's will and not our own. But regardless, is that love your neighbor. Don't hate. Love your neighbor. That's the whole thing that needs to happen. Love your neighbor. If we love our neighbor, if we love God and love our neighbor, it'll all come out good. And I know I'm not gonna be able to change the whole world at this. Tell them to love your neighbor and all, you know, this, because it's all been said before. This has all been said before. It's all come to this conclusion, and there will be people that agree and there'll be people that disagree. And if you disagree, well, I hope you'll be able to open your mind and study more to draw a bigger conclusion. But nonetheless, now we come to another thing I'm thinking about. What else is on the agenda today? I don't think so. There we go. Back on. Okay. What else is needed? I may not go to full 2 hours. I'd put 2 hours on there just in case. I do go full 2 hours. That's what I always do. But regardless, if I go 30 minutes, 15 minutes, or 45 minutes, or whatever the time is. But what's next? What can I think of next? Health care. Obamacare came in a couple of years ago. Came into effect and it said that all Americans would require health care. And if you didn't get health care, you'd be penalized on the tax. I've never heard of it. Force somebody to get health care, knowing if you're going to force somebody to get health care, why in the world are your premiums going to be no less than $500-something, or $600, or $1,000? I mean, if you're going to force them to get health care, it ought to be free. Or at least cost affordable, maybe $50 or something. Make it where it's actually affordable. Make the insurance company goes down. Make the insurance company lower their prices. Make the drug people lower their prices. People have health insurance. But do I disagree that Americans should have health insurance? No, Americans should have health insurance. It helps you. It'll help you pay your bill. It'll help you go throughout it more smoother. It means you should have health insurance. But I do not believe, nor is my understanding from the U.S. Constitution, that it's right for the government to forcibly tell someone. Otherwise, they'll be penalized by taxes. Now, you may agree to disagree or disagree on that. Think about it. All men are created equal. If we're supposed to have freedom and have choice in America, I'm happy. Because that's the way it should be. But I say Obamacare needs to be getting rid of because it is eating us in debt. We're going further and further in debt because we keep putting stipulations and keep adding stuff that we can't afford. Whether what we should be doing is don't try to get all this new stuff, make it all cost efficient so people can actually pay it. Everybody should be paying income tax. At least something. I agree with Dave Ramsey that everybody should be paying something of income tax, they say, but I want the money. I want the money. Love of money is root of all evil. I'm not saying money is root of all evil. I said the love of money, greed. Well, by the way, as you know, income tax is dishonest gain because it's coming from the government called earn income credit. If you don't pay in, how are you earning anything? How can you earn something that you have not paid? But regardless of taxes, I believe if the government would use this opportunity, they're going to make legislation. Get rid of the earned income tax thing, the income tax, and make it where people pay taxes that would go for the debt. Trillions of dollars of debt using taxes. I mean, isn't that what the tax money is supposed to use for? It's for things like that. Social Security and all sorts of other different programs. I mean, if we're going to pay the legislators and pay Congress and pay the president and pay all these other things, then why not put it to good use to pay off our debt? You want the economy to grow. Stop getting yourself into a hole, to a debt, America. Get out of debt. I urge you to listen to Dave Ramsey's show. Probably on live now, but I urge you to listen to Dave Ramsey's show, which is going to lead up to my next category, since I'm talking about finance a little bit too. Healthcare, finance, they almost go hand in hand here. Because how can you fund something which you do not have money to fund? I mean, money's not going to fall from the sky and say, here's the money for Obamacare. It won't cost you anything as far as in debt. You'll be able to do this for the rest of your life, and yada, yada, yada. There's one like that. It has to be paid by some sort of money. But do you want the economy? Would you rather get a lot of money and see the economy crash, or would you rather pay in $2 and see the economy grow and your income as far as paycheck rise? I want to see the economy get better to make our nation as a whole better. And that's what we need. Yep. And now I'm getting into finance. And if people will follow Dave Ramsey's plan on financial peace, two books I recommend to you. I'm going to recommend two books to get resale. Financial Peace by Dave Ramsey. The Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey. If you read those two books and follow it, it'll help you get out of debt and it'll help you be better fit for the economy and for life. You will have a peace of mind when it comes to your finances. Your finances. And it all goes to show, if Dave Ramsey's a good guy, here about a week ago listening to his podcast every now and then, something he has said. It goes to thinking in your mind about how you use your money. That's what my New Year's resolution is as well, but it's actually my everyday resolution. Just because I make a resolution, not mean I'm going to wait for New Year's to start. I'm working on me every day, even after New Year's. I'll be making resolutions and things I should improve on every year or every day because there's things I can always improve on. And I want to be better by saving money, functioning better with my money. Because how can I be a leader in society and a leader in the church, which I want to be? I want to be a preacher. How can I be a leader in the church if I can't handle my money? It shows irresponsibility if I can't handle my money. I want to be responsible. I want to be responsible. America, I am here. I want to be your voice piece for today. Is that the fact of the matter is? Proverbs even has financial advice. The borrower is servant to the lender. The borrower is servant to the lender. Proverbs. You make a car loan. You go to the bank. Get out of the loan. You are served to that bank to make payments for that car loan you just got. The borrower, servant, to the lender. And you have to pay it off, otherwise they will come get your car. So, my best advice to you, don't get in debt. I'm going to tell you something Dave Ramsey has said, of course, when it comes to car loans and mortgages and several things like that. Make you a budget. And make it in your budget to save. Put a separate savings fund. Okay, we need a car. We're going to save this much money for a car. If you save $10,000 for a car, and within a year's time, maybe, you might. You can get you a car worth that money or less. And if not, you have a lot of money to put down on it. That way you're not overwhelmingly in debt that you cannot handle it. And you can financially do it within your budget and be peace. And yes, it's a car. Make sure it's planned out. But don't be stupid with it. Don't spend your life involved in the stupid tax. In the stupid tax idea, I mean, take out a second mortgage just to get a BMW. I won't take out a second mortgage for nonsense stuff. I mean, there are better things you should do with your money than to take out a second mortgage to do anything, in my opinion. But I want to read you a little bit of excerpt out of Financial Peace because let you know that, by the way, I'm working on chapter 2 of Financial Peace. I've been working on it. I'm reading it even more. Is that, I want to read you. I wanted to say that Financial Peace, Dave Ramsey was poor. Dave Ramsey was rich before he became poor. As far as that goes, which I think, if I remember the story correct, I think he grew up poor, got some money, came poor again, got too far behind in debt, ended up paying $1.2 or something like that $1 million off the bank and credit union, credit places, and all sorts of things. Then now he's telling you how to get out of debt, which is amazing, which I am grateful. He is trying to do. We need people like that to try to help others. And so far from what I've seen from his Financial Peace book and what I've looked at in the Total Money Makeover book, it'll help you and it'll make you money more. Because if you do everything right, make yourself a budget, you stick to that budget. Not only does it make a budget, stick to it. If you put off, and if you have debt, if you are having debt right now, financial issues, that just say, I can't pay off. I got a car payment I got to pay off. I've got a mortgage I've lost. I got to pay my house payment. I got to pay this payment. Well, you use the debt snowball. Okay, which one can you pay off the quickest, the furthest? Put it at number one. Make sure you pay that payment and not pay a little more than what the payment is and get that paid off. Then you work on number two. Then you work on number three. I'm not saying that you should skip your payment. I'm saying that you should put the one that's going to be paid off the earliest, number one. And then put the next one in line number two, and the next one in line number three, and you work on paying the suckers off, and you stay out of debt, and you save money, and save you up an emergency fund. After you get out of debt, save yourself up money for an emergency fund, because you never know what might happen. It might be a natural disaster, might be you lose your wallet, something like that. I mean, there's all sorts of things that may happen. But make sure you save yourself up money for emergency fund. I want to read the back of this. That's what I want to do. Why do Americans need financial peace? That's what it says in the back. And this is a quote by the New York Times. In 1996, 1 in 100 households will declare bankruptcy. Over 62% of Americans retire on annual incomes below $10,000. I tell you right now, you should also save up for your retirement. Because if you save up for your retirement and you put yourself money aside, whenever it comes to time to retire, you will retire with not only your benefits from your job, but you will have also your benefits from your self-put plan, which means you'll be set. And if you use your budget wisely as you're going to retirement, you'll have no worries regarding the money. And you'll even have yourself still that emergency plan. Here's another one. That was by the U.S. Census Bureau. This is the Wall Street Journal. Nearly 70% of all consumers live from paycheck to paycheck. Are you living from paycheck to paycheck? Read Financial Peace by Dave Randy. Are you looking to retire on below $10,000? Read Dave Ramsey's book, Financial Peace. Are you one who's almost declared bankruptcy or have already declared bankruptcy? Read Dave Ramsey's book, Financial Peace. Here's another quote by U.S. Today. 55% of all Americans always or sometimes worry about their money. Are you worried about your money? Are you worried about your finance? Read Financial Peace by Dave Ramsey. It'll help you with your economy. It'll even help the U.S. government's economy if they read it. And followed by what? By doing that, if you want to make a budget for Congress, put yourself up a United States National Emergency Fund or something for yourself, for the government, say, for the stock market, say, or whatever it may be that controls the money. But if people would follow by this, peace, here's what it teaches you how to do. It teaches you how to get out of debt permanently. It teaches you to save for the future and retire with confidence. It's you to have money left over at the end of each month. It'll help you restore financial communication in marriage. Wow. Stop worrying about money. You can have peace. Read Dave Ramsey's book, Financial Peace. You won't have to worry about money. You won't have to worry about your money. It'll help you get out of debt. Now, the second book I recommended to you was Dave Ramsey's book, Total Money Makeover. Now, you know he has a Dave Ramsey show. Read the back of this book, because this helps you. This helps you. Here's a quote on top of it. If you will live like no one else today, later you can live like no one else. Build up your money muscle with America's favorite finance coach. Here's what it says. Okay, folks. Do you want to turn those fat and flabby expenses into a well-toned budget? Form your sad and skinny little bank account to a bulk-up cash machine? Then get with the program, people. There's one sure way to whip your finances into shape, and that's with the Total Money Makeover. By now, you've heard all the nutty get-rich-quick schemes, the fiscal diet fads that leave you with a lot of kooky ideas but not a penny in your pocket. Hey! If you're tired of the lies and sick of the false promises, then take a look at this. It's the simplest, most straightforward game plan for completely making over your money habits. And it's total results, not pie-in-the-sky fantasy. With the Total Money Makeover, you'll be able to design a surefire plan for paying off all debt, cars, houses, everything. Recognize the 10 most dangerous money myths. These will kill you. Secure a big fat net. This will kill you. I don't mean it physically. It'll kill your finances. Secure a big fat nest egg for emergencies and retirement. Where Financial Peace gave you the solid saving investing principles, this book puts those principles into practice. You'll be exercising your financial strength every day and quickly freeing yourself of worry, stress, and debt. And that's a beautiful thing. In the 10 years since the first release, millions of ordinary people have experienced a total money makeover. What are you waiting for? The Total Money Makeover, with timeless wisdom, fresh insight, and new back off the book resources, is the one financial workout that guarantees everything will work out. So, but here's my advice to you. If you get this book, too, along with Financial Peace, read Financial Peace first, and then read right behind it. All right, read and apply Financial Peace, and then read and apply the Total Money Makeover. If you read Total Money Makeover, it won't make any sense if you haven't read Financial Peace. You read Financial Peace and apply those to your life, you step by step, and you apply those principles with Total Money Makeover, you'll be set. And you're fine. And that's what I'm hoping, that's what I'm trying to do myself. So, now we're done by finances, and I told you I'm probably not going to end up using a whole 2 hours. So, my last event of the podcast is my soapbox of the day. Soapbox of the day. Okay. Here's my soapbox of the day. I was watching a show the other night on C-SPAN talking about free speech in college. How they were saying, well, what if a speaker came to speak at a university that was known to speak hate speech? Or kids on college campuses, what things can they say and what things, or are they limited on things that they can say on college campus? Well, the Washington Post did a study demonstrating this. It says, in August, Villanazer conducted a national survey of 1,500 undergraduate students at four-year colleges. Many of Villanazer's questions were designed to gauge students' understanding of the First Amendment. Colleges, after all, pay a lot of lip service to freedom of speech, despite high-profile examples of civil liberty squelching on campus. The survey suggests that this might not be due to hypocrisy so much as misunderstanding of what the First Amendment actually entails. For example, when students were asked whether the First Amendment protects hate speech, 4 in 10 said no. This, of course, incorrect. Speech promoting hatred, or at least speech perceived as promoting hatred, may be abhorrent, but is nonetheless constitutionally protected. The online survey of 1,500 undergraduate students at U.S. four-year colleges and universities, all U.S. citizens, conducted August 17th and 31st. For a confidence level of 95%, the margin of error is between approximately 2% and 6%, depending on the group. There are no statistically significant differences in response to this question based on political affiliation, but there were significant differences by gender. Women are more likely than men to believe hate speech is not constitutionally protected. Students were asked whether the First Amendment requires that an offensive speaker at a public university be matched with one with an opposing view. Here, 6 in 10 mistakenly said that yes, the First Amendment requires balance. The most chilling findings, however, involved how students think repugnant should be dealt with. Villanazer offered a hypothetical that may sound familiar to those who recall recent rape cases at California State, Middlebury, Claremont, and other institutions. And the whole gist of it is that are young people limited on what they can say on college campus? What do you do? What do you say about freedom of speech? What say about freedom of speech? Well, according to the First Amendment of the Constitution, we are protected by right that Congress shall make a law against freedom of speech, religion, so to speak, and yada yada yada. Okay, that covers all speech. So, at least the question, are young people limited, or should are young people limited to their speech? And the answer is no. It should not be limited. I'm not saying, I'm not giving advice for college students to go up there and just start cussing out the teachers and say whatever they want to say. No. Be proof. When it comes to freedom of speech, is that all speech according to the Constitution is protected, of course, unfortunately. Now, I'll say this. How do you resolve conflict that results because of freedom of speech? Now we get into a different element. We go to a different problem. How do you do that? You do that by a concept called verbal judo. Something the police officers are trained in. Well, this is this. A conflict arises. Let's say somebody says something that hurts, that has hurt about three or four people, and it's caused a whole ruckus in the middle of the hallway. And you're trying to get down to the bottom of it. Do you A, forcibly remove them, forcibly take them to class without addressing them at all? Or do you B, talk it out with a smooth, gentle, and precisely language? And trying to help keep the situation. Let's look at this book called The Verbal Judo Way of Leadership, Empowering the Assembly Line and Inside Up, by George Thompson and Gregory Wolf. Page 47, The natural reaction to an insult is direct confrontation, a lashing back at the attacker. But such reaction only precipitates further escalation, possibly violence. We recommend a more studied tactical response of deflection and redirection. As ancient samurai wisdom puts it, if a man throw a spear at head, move head, spear miss, man now disarm, and now it is your turn. Certain tactical phrases used at the proper moment in time can enable you to deflect anything someone says to you. If you are called an idiot by a ranking superior, for example, something we have heard occur in more than one police department, a proper verbal deflector might be, sorry you feel that way, or I can see that you're upset, sir, but any one of these deflectors can accomplish several powerful things for you. One, you feel good, for you are armed and ready for such assault. Two, your response is a springboard-focused tactic. Phrase, I hear that, for example, springboards you quickly to the word but. Thompson's law follows every word following the but must be tailored to the professional goal at hand. I hear that, sir, but perhaps the officer's recommendations have some merit not immediately seen, for example, yada, yada, yada. You see how argumentation and the way you use words. His mouth getting dry. I'm getting where I'm going to talk, which I'm going to end the show here in a little bit. When we're dealing with situations in conflict, if you use verbal judo and use words to calm down instead of trying to make it a whole argument and try to get louder than they are, so to speak, but use it to a calm manner, it's like, sir, I understand, but can you please hear us out? Or can you understand that, well, I hear your problem, sir. I hear you. I'm listening. Explain what your problem is. Or let's say it's like a police officer stopping, pulling somebody over. Do they go up there and say, sir, you know, you're going too fast. You just let it lay down. Or is it, sir, do you know why I pulled you over? They may respond back, no, sir, I don't know why you pulled me over. Say, well, the problem that I was aware of, and it's for safety reasons, is that I noticed on the radar that you were going 10 miles over the speed limit. And so, in my fear of an accident that may result in someone's life being lost, I pulled you over to say that you were going your speed. So, rather than going up, walking up and saying, you're speeding, you need to slow that thing down, which one was the best scenario? Obviously, scenario two, where the officer you not and gentle. Okay, let's use it to a non police matter. You're at a mall. yourself and you see a dispute going on, and it's caused attention to a lot of majority of the crowd, but it needs somebody to help take control and disperse. How do you deflate? And maybe it's so big that they see you walking and they say, "Sir, help us." And they want you to take their side. Well, how do you resolve that conflict? You say, "I don't have time for it. I got to go do my own stuff. Y'all see to it." Or is it, okay? Can you tell? What is time? Can you please tell me the problem and point level? And say, starting with you, what happened, or what's the matter? And you hear both cases, and you don't say, "Well, you're wrong and he's right," or "She's wrong and he's right," or "He's wrong and he's right," or whatever it may be. You say, "Okay, say the problem was that I don't like the dress you picked out." Another one's like, "You should have gone with pink," or "You're gonna hurt my feelings," or I don't know, some kind of random stuff comes up. I said, "Well, maybe you take the fact that they like that color. That's their color, but and just work it out. Talk, speak it in love. Speak it in a soft tone. Why are we yelling at them?" Obviously, that's been using verbal judo to de-escalate the situation. Let's try to be calm, try to disperse the crowd, and try to help the individuals calm down and to work it out. That's how we get away of situation. That's my soapbox for today, and that's the show for today. I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you've learned something. And until next time, this is the Jonathan Exum Show. Jonathan Exum signing off.